Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
With reach out and let me know who they are. I've got some really good episodes through those connections. Or if you just got a buddy or somebody that's a really good storyteller, something like that, just send me a message and I would easily reach out to them because most people are really great. I have been messing up a couple of interviews. I've missed two and I feel like an idiot because there are two good ones. One we will get back on, so that one's not a big deal. The other one, they ghosted me, so we will not be hearing from Trophy Line Tree Saddles. I'm gonna work on Tethered because I'm buying two Tethered tree saddles tomorrow, so I'm gonna buy those and see if I can't talk them into letting me do an episode with them. I'm sure they would. So we'll try and get something that like that on to focus on tree saddles in a western hunt, because I'm interested in learning a little bit more about it. We did an episode a long time ago that was that company was not fun to work with, so wanted to redo it. So in this episode, we are talking about Montana. Let's dive into it, and I appreciate you all listening. Again, if you wouldn't mind, leave me a review, like, and follow, and all that good stuff. So again, thanks for listening. Follow me on Instagram at the Western Hunting Hub on Instagram and Facebook. Thanks, guys. All right, Tyler, thanks for joining me this morning on my podcast. And I wanted to bring you on just as a Montana hunter, just to talk a little bit about what it takes to hunt Montana. Colorado is getting a little packed. I'm sure Montana is getting packed too. So, and I just like to expand opportunities, but wanted to just bring you on and love networking, chatting with new people. And you kept popping up on social media, so I needed to reach out and get to know you. But if you wouldn't mind, just introduce yourself real quick.
Yeah, first off, man, I appreciate you having me on. It's probably the earliest podcast I've ever done, but we'll get it in real quick and knock it out. So I like your style in regards to that. But yeah, my name's Tyler. I moved to Montana just over a year ago with my wife from Nashville. So we've been adjusting to that. I was non-resident last year, so I didn't really get to hunt a whole lot apart from some muleys, in the later season. I was basically more of a cameraman / filmer. So this will be my first full year, hunting Montana. There's a lot that goes into it, at least with all the different permits and all this other stuff. I had to get a lot of help because obviously I just grew up pretty much hunting whitetail my whole life, man. So coming out here with all these different varieties of big game and tags and this and that, and heck, man, I'm used to just going to a sporting goods store and buying a tag and then going hunting. So
yeah, there's a lot of layers to it.
Adjustment, man. There is, man. There's a ton of layers to it. And I actually have a few funny stories, if you want to get into those a little bit down the road, about regulations and how important they are to actually pay attention to.
But, of course.
Yeah, man, I'm a cop here in Montana. I've been doing that for 5 years. Awesome. Good days, bad days with that.
Yeah.
I enjoy fitness, working out. I run a lot, even though I don't like it. But yeah, it's just a brief overview, man. So
awesome. Yeah. When you're new to an area, I know that feeling of the opportunities are almost endless, and you want to go do this, you want to do that, you want to do this. So how long have you been married?
I've been married actually almost a year, August 15th, and we are going to do a 1-year honeymoon in Costa Rica here in about 8 days. So
nice.
It's been good, man. That's my lady. So
awesome. Well, for the sake of that relationship, don't be tunnel visioned, because I've had that conversation a time or two of, but I haven't ever had a chance to do this. I've never had a chance to do this. And then when you're leaving an area, it's like, this is my last chance to do this. I got to do this.
Right.
And then it's just super tunnel visioned. And I try so hard to be the best husband possible when it's not hunting season. And I mean, I feel like I fail every time, but just trying to make sure that I'm here when I'm here, and when I'm gone, when hunting season hits. I mean, it's for work I'm gone during hunting season, and for personal hunting, I'm gone. So it makes it tough. But well, that's exciting, and congratulations for a 1-year anniversary on that, and that'll be a fun little later honeymoon. So. When you add kids to it, if you do that adds a whole nother layer, and conversations I've had a dozen times with folks, so it's kind of that gets fun. So Nashville, lots of whitetail, lots of hunting there. What said Montana to you? Like, what was the ticket there?
Real quick before that, man, like you said, you guys out there, get your house in order before hunting season. Try to be the best husband you can be beforehand. I did not do very good at that last year. So it's been a lot of chores and a lot of kind of honeydew things I've been doing before season, because I know that I'll be gone. So like Clint said, don't make the mistakes that we've made. Anyways.
And you did a full episode on that, didn't you?
Yeah. I actually got my wife on my podcast, and we kind of spoke about that, and there's things we could both improve on. But more so me. You just got to communicate with your spouse, man. And, you guys will figure it out. Trust me. If you're a hunter, you know the deal. So
yeah.
Well, it just takes work and communication. But.
That's amazing. You got her on. I don't know the dynamics of your household, but my wife hasn't even listened to my podcast after 135 episodes. She's never listened to probably 5 seconds of it, let alone want to be on it. So it's my world, not hers. She doesn't want anything to do with it. Right. She says listens to me enough talk about it. So she's caught up is what.
Yeah, she hears you enough, Clint.
Uh-huh. That's it. That's exactly it. So, so talk more about Nashville and what got you. Have you been hunting since you were a little kid? Got into that later? What's your hunting story?
Yeah, man, I've been hunting basically since I was probably 7, 8, 9, and then hunted probably until high school. All whitetail, man. My dad. I got my first bow when I was really young, and we would go do that. I'd go sit in the stand with him, Midwest style hunting, obviously, from, you know, kids that are from there, they probably have done a lot of that like I have. And then when I got to high school, man, I totally just stopped, like didn't bow hunt, didn't gun hunt, didn't do anything, just with sports. And I don't think I had the patience for it. I don't think I was mature enough to, you know, appreciate the solitude and just nature in general, and, you know, what it meant to take a life. I had killed a few deer, but I just totally lost interest. And then, you know, I went to college, played some baseball, and then I don't know, like something just called to me that you need to get back involved with this. And I started watching more hunting videos, and all my friends still hunted, and ended up coming home for like a winter break, and I asked my dad if he would split the price of a bow with me, and he was all for it. And then that was probably when I was, 18. So I've been full go again for the past 10 years. And it's all I talk about. You ask my wife, you ask my friends, like, we're all like, that's, it's on my mind 24/7. So yeah, I've been lucky enough to kill a decent one or two. And now it's just, I could give two craps about hunting whitetail, man. Like,
right.
Once you get in the mountains and you hunt elk and you see these hammer mule deer, it's like, man, there's like nothing better. So that's kind of where I'm at. Everyone's like, why'd you move to Montana? And I just say to hunt elk. And obviously that's not the reason why, but I'd be lying to you if I told you like it wasn't like one of the main reasons
part of it.
That I wanted to come here.
No, absolutely. I did the same thing. I was in South Dakota, yeah. Eastern South Dakota, which is whitetail country, and moved out to Colorado for 8 years. And it was the, that was that same story. It was part of the proposal to my wife. And I said, we're moving. So right. We're going that way. If you're in this, you're in this. So that's a part of it.
Yeah.
And I said it way more elegantly than that. But, it was a part of the proposal for sure that we're going that way. And it's 'cause I want to hunt whatever. And it actually came down, I was at work cleaning off a mount in the office. It was a mountain goat mount. And I just like took that off. I'd stared at it like for months and just like, okay, cool, a little mountain goat. And I didn't know anything about it. But as soon as I got it off the wall and I was cleaning it, looking at it, it's like, oh my gosh,
yeah.
This thing is so cool. Like mm-hmm. The hair that just, it's just the coolest animal I've ever seen. And it was just this little nanny. I was like, I am addicted. I want this on my wall. And that was something, I know it was a stretch to be able to add that to a hunt, but it happened within that 8-9 years. So, that wouldn't have happened had I still been in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where, whitetail is about it and hunting out of a tree stand was about it. So, or move driving to the western side of the state to hunt. So yeah, I get that. Absolutely. But, moving on to just kind of looking at, this fall, so this will be your first full season. What do you, Montana's tag season is done. What'd you draw? What are you getting? What's your hunt look like for this fall?
Yeah. So I just went, general deer, got an archery antelope tag, ended up getting, a permit for elk. Montana dudes know about the breaks. Some people love them, some people hate them. So I will be in the breaks this year. Don't ask me for any pens because I'm trying to figure it out myself.
But
got a black bear tag, which is like, I don't know, man, I have a plethora of tags and I'm like, oh my gosh, I only spent $230. Like being a resident is pretty awesome, man. So, we're excited.
What is it about the breaks that people love it or hate it? Like that's probably common knowledge there in Montana, but I hear and see on shows like, oh, this is amazing. Like what do you hate or love about it? What's the stigma? Yeah,
and that's the thing, right? It like there's no in between. I think it reminds me of myself because people either are big fans or they're like, nah, that dude ain't me. Like he's not my person. And that's how it is with the breaks. People are like, they either are all for the breaks or they're like, nope, absolutely not. I think they love the breaks because there is a lot of bulls. And there's some very big bulls there. People that don't care for the breaks. I've heard it's a zoo. There is a lot of people. It's not a very hard permit to draw. And there is a lot of river access in the breaks. So people who probably don't have kayaks or boats might feel like they have a disadvantage, which they do. And it's just super busy. There's a lot of pressure and that can be frustrating. And I get that.
Oh, sure.
And also, you know, like if it rains in the breaks, apparently you need to like run because the roads turn into a gumbo and you're going to get stuck and this, that, and the other. So I see pros, I see cons, but I don't judge anything or anybody until I go experience that thing. So,
and there's different areas of those those breaks there that are trophy unit, mm-hmm. really hard to draw, and the area you're going to is a easy draw.
Yeah, it's not okay. hard.
Cool. Cool. So, looking at hunting Montana in the future for elk and deer, it's kind of me and one other buddy's plans just to start looking at it. And then I was super bummed that there was a legislative change there just recently. I had thought that I was going to be able to buy my kids points, bonus points, to just go in and buy them. But I guess in 2021, that was a change, because I have a 4-month-old and a 4-year-old, and it's like, sweet, my kid is going to have bonus points, and he's going to be 12 and have 12 points. He'll be 17 and have 17 points. I'm not allowing him to use them until then. But mm-hmm. that changed. So, because I guess other people were doing the same thing. So sure. Now that changed. You can't buy bonus points until you're of age to hunt. So I guess whenever that is, I guess 12-ish, or it probably doesn't allow you to when you're doing either a mentor or the apprentice like hunts there. So I'm starting at 1 point, and behind the game is a lot of people I'm sure have a couple of points, 3 points, and then the majority I know have lots. I don't know what point creep is up to in Montana, but I know Colorado it's 32, 33 points somewhere in those big trophy units. But I never go for those. I that's not my style. It'd be cool to have a unit 2 or 201 in Colorado that's like those high end big bulls, high success rate kind of hunt. But the pressure that's on that, I would rather go have some cool hunts every 5 to 7 years and then mix that up. But so we're looking at it, and both me and my buddy are pretty experienced with diving into various states and applying for points. And we listened to the Epic Outdoors podcast. We've both apply. My other buddy hunts all over the world, and we understand looking at stuff, but he texts me, he's like, dude, Montana's confusing. This is hard. And that's coming from someone that, who, not me, my buddy, is headed to Spain here sometimes Mongolia next month to hunt Ibex. So he's figuring that out, but he looked at Montana and got confused. So I don't know where to start. And I just wanted to chat with another hunter to get that bias approach as to what to expect. And I think even though you've only been there little over a year, that you're the perfect candidate for that, because you are deep in that and trying to figure it out. And I'd love to hear what you've learned over that period. So let's look at a broad scope for a sec. Colorado is such a big destination state for elk due to them having the most elk than any other state. So second, third rifle season is what has a majority of the hunters, and then because they're over the counter. Archery season also over the counter. You can show up that day in the middle of the season. You show up to Walmart and you go buy your tag. You drop your $700 and out the door you go. It's also cheaper, I believe, than Montana and anywhere else. So you get this tag and off you go hunting. What is it in Montana that is the season or the tag type or whatever that is the majority of hunters are doing, the non-resident or resident, whatever?
Well, you have your deer combo license for non-residents in terms of, which is general, right?
Sure. Okay.
And that alone, dude, is like just shy of $700.
Jeez.
Obviously, you can buy a point, or you can get extremely lucky and apply for a general tag and get it. My dad's from Michigan, and he did it on the first try last year. So it just depends what it is that you're looking to do. If you want to just accumulate points, which it sounds like y'all are doing, and apply for, you know, a bigger, like an actual unit where you need to go that holds big mule deer, or if you want to just, you know, buy a general license, you know, opposed to a permit. It's just totally up to you and what it is that you'd like to do.
So you've already answered a question that is, it's just the lingo as well.
Yes.
In or learning, yes, each state. So I had general and then I was like, draw. What's that? Nope, that's permit. So permits and, right, and general. So general is basically the over the counter. But is it over the counter or apply?
It is not, man. They changed it. Of course, the year I moved here, which was 2021, they changed it. So I had to wait like 6 months, because when you move here, you have to establish residency. You have to prove that you live here with a thing of bills and your license and things like that, that, hey, I've lived in this state for 6 months, and then you are officially a resident. So I had to wait. And of course that ran me through early November, before I could even go and buy my tag, but I was a resident. So if you are a non-resident, there is no over the counter here. And that changed last year.
Huh? Yeah. I was looking, I see the, for non-resident, deer combo is 646. And then the elk combo is 934. So definitely a good chunk of change as well. And then there's a quota for that. So, which arguably I'm sure residents of Colorado would love to maybe see a quota to that. But so you got your general elk and deer combos. So when it says elk, general elk combo, what's the combo of? You got an elk tag. What else you got?
Should be deer. Yeah, should be deer, because I've actually tried to buy that tag as a non-resident before I knew that I was moving here. And like you said, it cost me $1,200 and some change.
Hmm. So then, but if it says general deer combo for 646, it's just a deer. Well, what's the combo, yes, on that?
I think the combo on that would be either you can shoot a whitetail and or mule deer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it gives you two options in terms of deer. Now, for your combo elk, it might be, you know, it's elk and deer, but I don't know if the deer is specified via mule deer and or whitetail. I would imagine it's either or, because, sure, that seems to be the pattern that they're doing here with residency and non. So
yeah.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why Midway USA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Well, and one of our goals is not necessarily to build up too many points. It might be, we might even be looking at next year and, mm-hmm, having a point. But now I did learn one thing, that I could even be screwing myself with having 1 point versus having zero. Looking at how the allocation of tags is based on, there's a certain percentage that go to people with 0 points, and there's a less percentage of people that tags go to people with 1 point. So that's what I kind of saw, but I don't know if that was in the permits or if that was for general. So that's where I read that. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even know what to do. And let's just take one example. We want to do a Eastern Montana mule deer hunt. Elk is down the road. That's a, sure, that's a add in my rotation of states to hunt elk in. Next year I'm going to Colorado again, and Montana and Wyoming will add in the rotation eventually as I build up just enough points to be able to draw something that's not a general tag is kind of what my thoughts are. So help, where do I go? Not where do I go, but what do I do?
You're asking me what you do for elk?
No, for deer, just like,
oh,
just for helping me organize this, organize my thoughts as to my steps in planning a hunt out. That, and maybe that's just what have been your steps to planning out either your permit hunt or your general hunt, and understand like through the system wise, what were some of those decisions you had to make along the way?
I'll be honest. So I will probably never apply for like a deer permit in Montana. I don't think there's I love hunting mule deer. I love hunting whitetail. I'd rather pull an elk permit if need be. Although next year I'm thinking about not even doing that. If you are a decent hunter and a decent woodsman and can study maps, you can find slammer mule deers on state land, on BLM, on block. Like, I don't think you have to, especially as a non-resident, try to accumulate, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, I don't know how many points you need to get a crazy good unit for mule deer. And it's totally your preference, right? Like anything. But I mean, you could potentially draw in the next year or two and go hunt some general, dude. I'll help you out.
No, that is exactly what I wanted to hear, that I know the state agency wouldn't say. That's exactly what I wanted
to
hear.
Yeah, exactly, man. You know how it is. But there's big freaking deer here, man. I see them on public land all the time. It's just, and you just have to find places that people don't want to go.
Right, right.
You have to find places that people don't want to go. And that's half the battle anyways. A lot of people want to park the truck and, you know, walk 0.2 mile and hope to kill a slammer. It's like, maybe, but don't you think everybody else is doing that? So just be good with your maps and study them, especially because you don't have time to scout out here. You don't need a permit, man. I'm just being honest and real with your audience. You really don't, at least in my opinion.
Cool.
What I've seen.
Cool. Well, without digging further, I'm going to say that's what I'll do. I'll do a general deer. But then just because I know elk is down the road and it's not something that is, that I need to do right now, that might just be getting some bonus points. And so Let me ask about that first. The IC bonus and preference points available in that state. I've read it. I thought I understood it. Seconds later, it's gone. my reading comprehension skills on the ACT were not very high. So that confuses me. So bonus points were easy. I mean, I went and bought those and away I went. So do you know the difference?
I do. I actually had a conversation with Fish and Game not too long ago, because we tried to do an episode a few months back about how anybody can come out and hunt here. What she told me, man, is that bonus, and it's so funny, it just literally depends where you're trying to get your source of information from, because there's so many different websites, you know. And it even depends on the person you're talking to at Fish and Game. One day it might be John, the next day it might be Tim, and they'll give you two different answers. So I have a few things pulled up on my computer. It says a bonus point is for non-residents, which doesn't quite make sense, because when I was talking to Fish and Game, they say bonus points are for residents, and then preference points are for non-residents. So it just depends on where you're getting your information from. It's like, who's right here? And I'm almost pretty sure that a bonus point is for residents and then a preference point is for non-residents. But now you got me thinking. I'm like, what the heck? Like, it's just, it doesn't, it's confusing, and it's all like the terminology, right? Because you'd like to think a point is a point, and that's
right.
That's that.
Right.
But
yeah.
Now, so you were, what did you buy?
Bonus points. Right. And because I didn't get in the draw, so I think the preference points are something you get when you're unsuccessful on your whatever choice. So bonus is what became available after July something. And it's that thing you can go in and buy up to a certain point. And it was $50 maybe. I don't remember. $25.
I think they raised the prices this year too.
Yeah. I can't remember. I spent $50 a species or $25 a species, but whatever it is, something like that. And, good thing I don't have a ton of Montana listeners. I got mostly Colorado listeners. And
yeah. Hopefully someone can clear that up for us, because I'm new to it. Just like, you know, you are as a non-resident. Like, I know there's some weird rules. Like, you can only have a maximum of 3 preference points here. And if you miss a year, you lose all of your points. Like, what kind of sense does that make? At least that's what I've been told by Fishing Game.
Oh, I read that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't have more than 3 points at a time. You know, you have the opportunity to buy an extra preference point if you go through an outfitter, but that's a whole nother can of worms that, golly.
Yeah.
I'll give you some outfitters names and you can talk to them, because I'm not your guy for that. But
no, I don't know anything about outfitters. I don't. Mm-hmm. You're a police officer. I work for the government as well. And yep. that's not the route that I am able to go.
100%.
But, okay. So then it's going to be, $25 is what those bonus points cost me as a non-resident. And bonus points essentially offer you additional drawing chances and are used for first choice drawing only. So every year that you're unsuccessful in a drawing, and you participate in the bonus point system, you'll be awarded 1 point. Mm-hmm. So those are accrued over time. But anyway, so general season, I really like hearing that I say the same thing about Colorado. It's like, there's no point in building up a lot of points. You can go find a 180-inch mule deer off of a 0 or 1 point unit if you work hard enough. Not as easy, but you absolutely can find big deer on 2, 3, 4 point units. My hunt this year, I have seen 180 to 200 inch mule deer on there. Have I had a chance at them? Not quite. Maybe I could if I could shoot 800 yards, but I've seen them. They're there. And there's big old mule deer. Colorado's known for its mule deer, but so is Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana. They all have big mule deer. And I just want to have a go have a good experience with my buddy, have a good time, learn new country, learn new state. But kind of what's some of those things around that? Like, when's the season? How long is the season? Or what have you kind of got in your planning so far that you've learned?
Yeah, so archery runs basically from that first week of September, like usually the second, third, or fourth, to October 16th. And then there is about 5 or 6 day break that archery completely shuts down. And then from October 22nd through the 27th is rifle. So when I told you at the beginning of this that you need to be careful and understand regulations, I was so excited. I was like, man, I'm going to see if I can pull some strings at Fishing Game. And I was sitting at about 4.5, 5 months of residency. And I went and see if they could help me out and do me a solid and get me some tags. So the guy did. He gives me a general deer tag and a general elk tag. This was on about October 17th. I literally screamed home, grabbed my bow, threw my stuff in the truck, found a piece of state that I already knew that I wanted to hunt. And I popped up a little tree stand in this little transition area in a whitetail, in a little whitetail zone. And my buddy, he goes, did you go hunting yesterday? I was like, yeah, I did. He goes, dude, the season's shut down right now for like 5 days. And I was like, oh my God, no wonder nobody was out there. I saw no ducks or anything, but I had no idea. I'm like, if it's deer season, it's deer season, right? Like, who shuts deer season down in the middle of October? I'm like, what the heck's going on? But there's that little gap where, you know, if you're not legit on your regulations, then, you know, I could have gotten some serious trouble and this whole thing could have been over for me before it even started.
Right. I did the same thing in college with pheasants in South Dakota. We had, it's a 10 o'clock start, until a certain portion of the year where it's 12 o'clock. And me and my buddy out, we're out at 10 o'clock. Man, nobody's out here. This is awesome. There's no one here. There's no trucks. Let's go find some bird. We had a nice little hike and everything. And we got done. It's like, oh, we were not supposed to be out here.
I know. So it's just something I'm not used to. So I had no idea. I mean, it's funny looking back on it, but I could have gotten some serious shit.
Oh yeah. So the deer season doesn't even hit into November. Or is there anything that hits rut activity in November?
Well, your rut here in Montana is like that second week of November. So anytime from like, I don't know, the 12th through the 20th or that 22nd, like that 10-day period is really good. And that's rifle season, obviously. Like, a lot of dudes won't even bow hunt muleys and or whitetails early season because they want to chase elk, and then they'll just rifle hunt them when rifle season is appropriate. And then we have like a muzzle loader season that runs, I think the first, the second week, I think it's like the 10th through the 18th or 20th of December. If you're into that.
But. I see. So, for some reason I had written down just a really short rifle season, but I see general season is like October 23rd or 22nd to November 28th. Got it.
Yes.
November 28th.
And that seems so weird to me. I guess maybe because you start earlier here. Like, I'm used to like October 1st, like opening, you know, for bow in the Midwest. And heck, I can hunt like shoot through January usually. But I guess here we start, you know, you can hunt antelope here in a couple weeks. So to not even really be able to hunt in December, because I don't shoot muzzleloader, but it was just kind of strange last year for me. But
yeah,
just months are a little bit different depending on where you live.
Yeah, and then I see a whole backcountry season.
Ooh, from me, and I have not heard of the backcountry season.
This is just a straight Google Montana deer season. You have backcountry archery, which is September 4th to the 14th, and then general backcountry season, which is September 15th to the 20-something. So, no idea.
Maybe. I have no idea. I just think it doesn't matter if you hunt in your backyard or if you hunt in the backcountry. I'm pretty sure archery season is archery season, if you ask me. But
yeah, this is not on, definitely not on the Montana Fish and Wildlife site.
Yeah.
So we'll just go over to the right site instead of a, there is a backcountry season. You have to dig into that, I guess. It looks like it's just certain units, like 150, 280, 316. So I think it's just like a little special thing. It's not super prevalent. So, but anyway, so we've got a general deer season that runs a pretty long time. The Colorado seasons don't run that long. You've got a week or week and two weekends really to get stuff done with a rifle. With a bow, you got September, and you're only hunting September, unless you want to use a rifle tag on your bow hunt. But there, you just don't have a ton of time to do that in. So you got a big window there, and all the way to November 28th. So there's some allure to Montana that I can see, because you can actually hunt the rut. How Colorado works is, 2 years ago, I believe, how they put the season structure, they have first, second, third, fourth season. Those fourth season tags can be really hard to get because they are deep in the rut. And we had a really, we had really late dates in the fourth season that allowed for heavy rut activity. You actually could hunt quite a ways into November, which probably not even all the way to, it was not November 27th or 28th. It was sooner than that. So you didn't get, you don't always get to hunt heavy, heavy rut activity, which can be kind of a bummer. You're doing it in October and early November, and then you kind of hit the middle of November. So you miss out on a lot of rut activity, but this is kind of cool. I like that, that you can hit that second week. Here in South Dakota, it can be very similar, second, third, fourth week of November, somewhere in there. Our mule deer are a little later than our whitetail in their rut. So it's kind of interesting also as you go further south, that that rut week changes. Not too far south. We share a border. So we're going to look at that then. General season, doing a rifle hunt on in eastern Montana, I think is our game plan. So what are some other things we should keep in mind as we're looking into this? Either resources or general laws or extra... I see, like, yeah, go on.
Yeah. So yeah, that it is nice. First of all, that's a shame. Isn't it crazy that you can't even really hunt what some people would classify as the best time to hunt deer, which is the rut in your own state? I don't know. I think that's wild.
You hit it, but it's that's why those four season tags are so desirable. And you hit it, but you don't see it all the way through. There's still plenty of rut activity afterwards. And I have chased lots of rutting deer in Colorado. It's just not. And this year, actually, I do get to hunt one of their late seasons, which is December 1st to the something 8th or whatever. So you do get to hit it, but it's not through November at all. But sorry to interrupt. Go on.
No. You're good, man. Just some, I guess, pretty generalized tips. When you try to research, there's just so much abundance of information. Like right now I have three different websites pulled up, FWP, Hunt and Fool, and I don't know what the other one is. I guess Onyx. I was scouting yesterday, but try to pick whatever site you think is the most accurate, and I would probably go with just FWP. And honestly, you have to dive in and you have to read these regulations. And it sucks because the print is very small and there's about 1,300 pages. What I like to do is I like to talk to an actual human just because information varies so much. So I'll just call with any questions that I have. And yeah, they're going to put you on hold. It's just like a bank. It's hard to get a hold of somebody. But once you do, they're usually pretty helpful, and depending on the answers that you get from whoever works at Fish and Game, you can compare them to their website and or whatever other website that you use to get your information. But usually they can help you out, and that has in turn helped me out, is just being able to talk, because it can get intimidating for non-residents who are coming out here. And that's been me. That's been who, you know, that was the shoes that I was in. And it can just be really intimidating because there's so much information. It's not as simple as going to a Cabela's and buying your tag anymore, which is how I grew up. So I just preach, man, regulations. Ask the freaking questions, because I'd hate to see somebody get hemmed up hunting where they're not supposed to, and or losing out on an opportunity to apply. Like, even the dates, there's certain dates that you have to apply, which you know that, but there's just a lot of T's and a lot of I's to cross, man. And do that and reach out to people online. Like, people are pretty good. Hit me up. If I don't know, I'll find you the answer.
Sweet. Is there a general hunting handbook with regulations, or is it all online?
If you're here, you can probably go into Fish and Game and get a hard copy, but whatever, like, what you need is going to be online. They have all the different permits, and they have rules for residents, rules for non-residents, how to apply, all that stuff. I mean, it's there. You're just gonna have to be patient, dig, and find what it is that you're looking for, because it is there. It's just, there's just a lot of info.
Yeah. How is the stats availability? Have you dove into looking at just some general season statistics on success rate, buck doe ratios, anything, any information that you've, cause I love digging into that once I have a general idea of what I'm doing and what my goals are. I love to know my chances of drawing. I love to know my, the success rates, and use those to kind of weigh my options and what tag I want to pull. So any idea on that?
Not off the top of my head. What's the, there's one really good site. I'm drawing a blank right now. Is it like Hunt Stand or something? It basically tells you, success rate and like all different types of units and most general and stuff like that. I just know like one random stat off the top of my head that like non-residents are limited to up to 10% of the permits available in any district.
Sure.
And you know, that's not a whole lot. So if you don't live in this particular state, I honestly wouldn't even worry about it. I mean, at the end of the day, it's Montana, and I promise you there's big deer here. Get your tag and then see where the best parts of the state are to go. But just focus on getting your tag, and then you can, you know, dive full in to be like, okay, what are the best parts of the states to hunt, or of the state to hunt? You know, did I get a permit, or am I general? And then go from there. You know, none of that matters if you're hunting, you know, September 10th opposed to November 10th. It can all change.
Oh, and I realize I'm so stuck in looking at units and or zones or districts instead mm-hmm. of if it's a general. I guess I need a vocabulary thing. Is it a zone, a district, a unit? What's it called there?
Yeah, so I call it all of them, man. Like, honestly, people don't really refer to them as zones. That's more units. That's, I think, okay. The majority of how people refer to it. But I've called it everything, man. I'm still, you know, I try to get the lingo down just as much as you or anybody else. Everybody's sure. got their own terms. But.
So for your general deer, a limited number of units that you're allowed to hunt with that, or is it majority, go for the whole state? What's the consensus on that?
Basically, man, I'll just get on Onyx. I don't know the exact consensus. I'll just get on Onyx, and it's like, okay, I'll just find some state or some BLM or some block, and then, you know, if you can hunt deer on those in those units. But like, for example, and I don't even know this, and I've just been so busy, and I obviously need to know because season is not too far away. But so I have a general deer tag, and I'm wondering, do you have to pull a permit in 410, which is where I'm hunting for elk, to shoot a mule deer there, or can you just use your general tag? Like, that's something very simple that I could find out in about 5 minutes. I just haven't looked. But you know, some units where you might have to pull a permit for elk might be generalized for deer, and you can hunt that. So it's there's so many ins and outs, man, that you just have to do your research, and that's something like I know that I have going on that I need to figure out.
Sure. I'm excited to learn kind of where those different areas are, because Montana's a huge state. And I mean, I'm on the western South Dakota, so I'm not far. I absolutely could, before the season, go into, Onyx tells me Honeycomb Hills. Just like, I just picked an area that is not far away into Montana. Yep. It's eastern. There's a lot of, looks like the on Onyx, that red outline stuff is block, right? Yep, block management. And I mean, I wonder if that southeast Montana is solid, or if it's, you need to be heading further north and that almost not far from the Canada border. Oh, I guess that's all break country along the Missouri. I don't know. I'm so excited to learn all of that. And that's part of really the off season and during the season plan, is you're researching and figuring these things out. You're not just, and what's it makes this different than a Eastern hunt where you walk into your convenience store and buy your tag. You are hunting year round. You plan this, not just setting trail camps, setting stands and planting food plots. Now we're looking at, where the deer are, where, what's the quality of hunt? How do we get in there? Some places getting permission for things, if that's a possibility. But let's dive into access in those areas. And obviously, BLM is pretty prevalent across eastern Montana. Block is available here. What is block? I see it overlapping with on public and private.
Basically, it's owned, and you have to like sign in when you get there. There's a little sign-in station. Mm-hmm. Where you put your name and you do all this and you do all that, and then you throw the sheet of paper in the box, and that way they can regulate how many hunters are going through and what it is that you're hunting for and such like that. Then there's two different types, though. There's type one and type two, and if you got your laptop up, you'd probably be able to correct me. One of those you have to like set up an appointment, so it's not as simple as just driving up and signing in and going to hunt. One of those you have to call the landowner and ask, like, hey, what's a good time to meet and talk? And you have to set up an appointment, like when you'll be there and things of that such. And I can't remember off the top of my head, just because I only hunted block like a handful of times.
Yeah. Block one, type one is hunters can administer their own permission and regulate their own access. So two must be the... you have to requires hunter to obtain permission through other means.
Yeah.
So when you, well, shoot, what's that mean? Is there so you got to find permission. It's available, but you have to get permission. I'm assuming like a check-in box were there for you to contact, or a publication that gives out numbers
on Onyx. So like you'll see the type ones and the type twos. For the type twos, you'll click that, and on Onyx it'll either give you a link and or just a phone number of where to contact that individual and basically set up your little appointment or tell them when you'll be there. But they usually either give you a link or give you a direct number to contact the landowner.
Got it.
Okay. And with all in all honesty, man, whenever I would see type two, I'd just be like, I'm not dealing with it. Like, I just, like, if I want to hunt, I want to hunt. And that's that. Like, I'd rather just go knock on a random person's door and ask them for permission. If that's like, if I have to get permission like that, you know what I mean? So yeah. I'm going to set up any type of appointment. I'm just going to go like try to land a killer ranch. But
where in Montana are you?
I'm in Billings.
Got it.
Yeah. So that's pretty close to you in terms of, you know, where I'm located in the state.
But. Yeah, you're not a far drive from big mountains and not a far drive from hitting Eastern. Pretty
right.
Almost centrally located. So that's pretty cool. All right. So what else we got? Any other little last things you've been thinking about here as to what about permission? Gaining permission. What's that? I probably got a sense of what that's like, but just to share, if you've had success, and I bet if you're into the community like you are, I'm sure as a police officer, you've got, you've getting to know people, and, sometimes that can be beneficial. But what's kind of the consensus on permission for deer hunting? Is it just, I know it's not back east. It's a little different, but,
yeah.
What have you found for success?
I have asked a total of zero people here for permission. I say that because I'm used to having to do nothing but ask for permission if I wanted, you know, some decent acreage to hunt some whitetail. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to have those, or to get those yeses and to form those relationships. And that was great. I moved out here, man. And I was like, I don't need anybody's permission. There is so much space. There's so much land. The only time we've called was to see if we could cross like 100 yards of private property to access a piece that was open. It was landlocked essentially, but not for long. But you don't, I mean, now if, you know, I have a few friends, their families own, you know, thousands and thousands of acres. Now, if I could get on that, absolutely. I have no issue with people who hunt private or can get on a ranch, or even if you want to go to an outfitter, man, or if you're just DIYing it. I just love that you want to be involved and get out and experience, you know, just the country and being in that bubble of these animals. I have no problem how you do it as long as you do it legally. And just enjoy yourself, man, because I think that, you know, sorry I'm going off on a sidetrack, but people that hunt outfitters or, you know, have access to these ranches, they can get judged a lot. And I think that's just because people that are doing that probably wish that they were on a freaking sweet ranch or had permission or could afford, you know, a $15,000 outfitter fee or whatever it might be. But those people didn't always do that. They were probably grinding it out like you and I at one point in time. Right. So I think just any way you can get out is cool with me. Just, I just don't really like road hunters that much. That's the only thing that I have.
You bet. Yep. But thank goodness for them. So, they just stay away from where the deer are.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not where the big ones are anyway. So it's cool.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there's a crap load of access, and I see what you're saying now. And a lot of these Western states absolutely do. It's, and I'm seeing that Montana has the second most acreage of landlocked property. Montana sitting at 3 million acres, second to Wyoming. So lots of checkerboarding, which really is what it is, but whatever. Mm-hmm. But I also like that in the sense that it offers little places here and there that can just provide opportunity, spreading out the pressure. And I also think that having a season from October 22nd through like over a month long, you can really spread that pressure out. And I'm sure opening day is what opening day is, but the pressure can be spread out throughout on public land, throughout multiple days. And I'm looking forward to it. I think this is something we're going to do in the next year.
Yeah, you should. Little tip for you, and you know this, but maybe some of your audience doesn't. In terms of pressure, man, hunt during the week. Oh, like you get all your week, you get all your weekend warriors. Like I work 4 tens, and my days off are Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Like I'd love to have a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, just so I could, you know, watch football all day with my wife on Sundays. But I love having the weekdays off because I can tie that into, you know, any trip. And there's definitely a lot less people during the week because people have jobs and they don't have weird schedules like I do. And then also with like the checkerboarding and stuff that you're talking about on maps, there can be a lot of pieces that look landlocked. But zoom in because they might connect at some little small point and it might only be for 50 yards or so. But those two units that look like they might be landlocked actually, you know, might connect at some point in the corner. So that's something worth looking into. And a little secret that we found out, we got lucky on a few times when we did that. And we were like, oh, sweet. Like we can go hunt there. So
Onyx has a really good little tutorial. It's probably a year old now, just on some scouting there, and it had some really good tips on finding these little pieces that really aren't that far in, but they're far enough. And little tips like that, not just those corners hitting the road, but to keep those, to find those spots that the road hunters are missing, and to be able to see that little pocket that's just out of sight, even though you're able to look 2 miles, but that pocket is just beyond that, that you can't glass from the road. So there's some good stuff on that. I really like on X YouTube channel. They've got some good videos on there.
They do, man. They really do. They had one about all that landlocked. Do you remember when those dudes flew in? I forget the title of it, but that's an excellent video. If you want to learn about that kind of stuff, I highly recommend watching it.
Yeah, that was good.
I don't remember the name of it, but it was really good.
I remember it being something very pretty literal, like landlocked or something.
Yeah, you'll find it if you go to their page, I'm sure.
Well, it's now 8 o'clock and we're done. So I love doing these in the morning. At least we can get to our day. But I really appreciate you jumping on the call with me, Tyler, and chatting hunting in Montana. And as always, I feel like I don't ever have time to really do my podcast justice, but I keep coming back to it. It's like, man, I should ditch it. But this is my learning platform. This is where I learn. And whether people are listening or not, I said, screw my social media for a little while. I haven't posted in a while, even advertising my posts, which it doesn't help the podcast at all. But I'm still learning and I'm still getting motivated. And I'll keep it at that until I find some more time. I've been burning at both ends. So, but I appreciate that. And I got to just keep doing this stuff because I want to learn. And it's a place where I can document this for the rest of my life and listeners as well. It's a place where it's just there to give an hour listen on a topic that even if it's not this year, this information we chatted about is not super timely. It's pretty general. It'll be relevant for the next 10 years, I bet. So appreciate all of that. Why don't you plug your podcast where people can find you, go listen, and I guess what's your podcast about? What's your main stick as to what you like to produce?
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on. And so you can find me on Instagram. It's _ guide, which is GEIG, and then another underscore. And I do the Montana Knox podcast, man. It's basically just essentially tailored to the current or aspiring Western hunter, which, you know, I've always strived to be. Get on there. I have a new guest on, pretty much how you structure your show, just about every week. And we talk all things, man. We'll be talking elk from mule deer to antelope to just life in general to fitness, ultra running, mindset things. So it's more than just a hunting podcast to me. It's a place where I can, you know, meet people like, you know, I'm sure you use your platform for, but once they get done listening to yours, swing on over to mine. And I'm not, how many episodes do you have, man? Like 130 or something?
130. This will be number 137, I think.
That's wild, man. Good for you. Podcasts, they can be tough to stay up with. You're always trying to contact people that, you know, are essentially strangers. Like, I didn't know you until basically the show. So you kind of got to shoot your shot. And to be so consistent with it, man, you should give yourself a lot of credit, because not only do you have so much information out there for people, but it's actually good information. You have a good show. There's a lot of average shows out there, but I consider yours a really good source of information. So
cool, thanks.
But yeah, that's where you can find me, man. Chances are, if people follow your journey, they're probably seeing some of my stuff around there too. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll tag that below in the show notes, so you can just scroll down and click on that, and you'll get to move on over and give that stuff a listen. So any good episodes coming up that you're excited about?
That's a great question. I actually have to find a guest this week.
Sometimes that's the way it is. You're like, oh crap, I got nothing.
I know. I've been grinding just with life in general. I've been traveling, and heck, I'm leaving for another 10 days here in another week. So yeah, I need to bank a few, and Yeah, we'll see. There will be one Monday though, so I always got to be consistent. So we'll find somebody. I promise.
All right. Well, sounds good. I appreciate your time, and we'll let you get back to your day.
Hey, brother, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you, Clint.
You bet.
Hey, everyone. Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.